from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, all eyes on Comey, a British election stunner, new tensions in the Middle East, infrastructure, and reality winner. In his testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday, former FBI Director James Comey explained how he took the president's hope that he would let the Michael Flynn investigation go.
I took it as a direction. I mean, this is the president of the United States with me alone saying, I hope this. I took it as this is what he wants me to do.
President Trump's personal attorney, Mark Kasowitz, said yesterday that the president is ready to move on.
The president feels completely vindicated and is eager to continue moving forward with his agenda and with this public cloud removed.
And huge questions for Britain and its Brexit as Conservative Prime Minister Theresa May's party stumbles badly at the polls. Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn said she should resign.
The mandate she's got is lost Conservative seats, lost votes, lost support, and lost confidence. I would have thought that's enough to go, actually, and make way for a government that will be truly representative of all of the people of this country.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable with Lisa Desjardins of the PBS NewsHour, Michael Crowley of Politico, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Were you watching Comey's testimony? What did you make of it? And what now? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Arlington, Virginia, is Lisa Desjardins, correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. She's been covering the Russia investigation and was at the Senate intelligence hearing yesterday for former FBI Director James Comey's testimony. Lisa, always a pleasure to have you.
Hello, Tom. Good to be here.
And with us from Washington is Michael Crowley, senior foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. He's been reporting on the impact the Russia investigations are having on the Trump administration. Michael, great to have you back.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Thank you.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beatty joins us. Hello, Jack.
Welcome back, Tom.
It is great to be back, and what a week to be back in. James Comey came out swinging. He did not like the way he was fired. He did not like the tweets that came out of the White House and Donald Trump. After that firing, here he was in his opening statement before the Senate Intelligence Committee yesterday.
The administration then chose to defame me and, more importantly, the FBI by saying that the organization was in disarray, that it was poorly led, that the workforce had lost confidence in its leader. Those were lies, plain and simple.
Lies, plain and simple, and that was not the only time he used the word lie yesterday, put it right at Donald Trump's feet. Talked here saying the president had fired him somehow, because of the Russia investigation.
I know I was fired. Again, I take the president's words. I know I was fired because of something about the way I was conducting the Russia investigation, was in some way putting pressure on him, in some way irritating him, and he decided to fire me because of that.
And it comes around to the question of obstruction of justice. The president's attorney saying vindication. Critics watching this and saying, wait a minute, we've got a lot to look at here. And James Comey himself pointing to Robert Mueller, who will now be lead the special investigation of this, and saying that's where this will be picked up. Lisa Desjardins, what did you come away from the hearing with yesterday?
Oh, it was quite a hearing, and it had a lot of billing to live up to. I think it did that. Tom, I counted 259 questions in just over 2.5 hours yesterday, so that was more than one a minute. It was essentially a marathon at a sprinter's pace, if that makes sense. And I think what we came across from that with was more of an overall impression of the direction of the clouds, if you will, over President Trump. I think Roy Blunt, a Republican who obviously is biased, he was clearly in the president's camp yesterday, summed it up well, thinking that he thought it was more positive for the president than negative. That said, there were some very large red flags that rose higher yesterday. But overall, Republicans prosecuted their case against Mr. Comey, trying to bring up the point that, well, obstruction of justice may not be something when a president says he hopes you can see to do something. It has to be more clear than that. And Mr. Comey, while he said he felt he was being directed to do something, stressed that it was a feeling he had. I think this hasn't cleared the bar for obstruction of justice yet. Democrats are still making that case, but Republicans were happy that it seemed to fall short, at least so far.
Michael Crowley, how did you see the positives for President Trump out of yesterday's testimony? And what about the negatives in the road ahead?
Yeah, Tom, I think that, you know, the Trump team and the Republican Party have been hitting back on Comey pretty hard. And I would say, given the terrible hand they've been dealt here, relatively effectively. I mean, overall, Comey comes across as a sincere, credible, devoted, now former public servant. And I think that, you know, in a vacuum, if you didn't have partisan allegiances, I think, you know, most Americans, it's hard to imagine, would not find him incredibly compelling and credible. But there has been this organized counterattack against his testimony that I think is probably scoring some points, certainly giving something for Republicans and Trump's core supporters to hang on to. You know, in particular, Comey at one point admitted that he had put out information about his meetings with President Trump by leaking his memos that he had written about these encounters to a trusted friend who passed it on to the media. Now, this does not appear to have been classified information. There doesn't seem to have been anything improper about it, maybe a little bit furtive. But to take one example, Republicans are going wild. As you know, Tom, the L word, by which I mean leaks, has been sort of the preferred method of counterattack by Republicans for months now, saying that Trump is the target of this coordinated campaign between the so-called deep state of intelligence and law enforcement agencies and the liberal media, and all these leaks are unfair and phony. And people are saying, well, this is just another example of the leaking. Now, I think what happened here with Comey is quite different than many of the other leaks we're seeing. But I think that's one example of a point you're seeing repeatedly made in conservative media that I think is probably giving some sustenance to Trump's base. And as with so many things in this case, dividing the country along partisan lines and convincing his supporters that there's no there there. But, you know, you asked on the other side of the equation, I think, again, Comey came across as extremely credible, tells a compelling story. And, you know, quickly, the last point, there are two tracks here. You know, one is the legal question about obstruction of justice and related things. And I think that that is slowly advancing, but it's going to take a long time before we determine whether Trump is actually in severe legal jeopardy, Trump along with his aides. I think on the political track, among people in the middle and inside of Washington, I think Trump suffered severe damage. But again, I think that that base is still sticking with him. And people who think that this means Trump is going to be impeached, you know, by the fall, I think are going to be disappointed.
Comey going after Trump's character, essentially calling the president a liar a number of times in the course of his testimony yesterday, and pointing to the basic problem, he said, which was foreign interference in American elections. Here he was before the Senate committee.
There should be no fuzz on this whatsoever. The Russians interfered in our election during the 2016 cycle. They did it with purpose. They did it with sophistication. They did it with overwhelming technical efforts. And it was an active measures campaign driven from the top of that government.
He had more to say about that. But why did he take notes, detailed notes, immediately after these meetings with Donald Trump? He did not trust the president of the United States. Here was Comey.
First, I was alone with the president of the United States, or the president-elect, soon to be president. The subject matter, I was talking about matters that touch on the FBI's core responsibility and that relate to the president, president-elect personally. And then the nature of the person. I was honestly concerned that he might lie about the nature of our meeting, and so I thought it really important to document.
Jack Beatty, what do you see unfolding in this testimony and its larger ramifications?
Well, just in that last quotation, Tom, I think we saw some a phenomenon that Winston Churchill, in his history of the Second World War, calls level with events. He's always asking his subordinates in memos to discuss reality in ways that are level with events. Don't try to gild things. If things are dire, say they're dire. That statement, I couldn't trust the president. I thought he would lie. That's level with events. This president has shown since he, well, throughout the campaign, and certainly since his inauguration, that he has a almost wanton disregard for the truth. Whether it's lying or dissembling or deceit, whatever you want to call it, there's numerical markers for this. And Mr. Comey went right at that is the character flaw in the president that makes his defending him a very difficult proposition, and that makes and that has to at some level worry Republicans. Yes, I think Michael is right. They're rallying around as far as they can, but it has to worry them that this crack is going to widen and perhaps engulf them.
But where does this go, Jack? Even if the president was not entirely truthful at every moment, well, let's say with James Comey, that's not enough to change his hold on power. Where does this go on the basis of what you heard from James Comey yesterday?
Well, it goes to Mr. Mueller's investigation, and that could take a while. People reminded me the other day, Whitewater was a 7-year, in Lisa's term, marathon.
But that was about an obscure case in Arkansas. This is about the election of the president of the United States and alleged Russian interference.
Yes, it is. And I thought the striking comment last week was from James Clapper, former director of national intelligence, who said, "Watergate pales, in my view, compared to what we're confronting now. I'm very concerned," he said, "about the assault on our institution coming from both external sources, Russia, and an internal source, the president himself."
Lisa, this is becoming untenable in some way. It pales next. Watergate pales next to this on the one hand, versus the president is vindicated on the other hand. There is such a canyon between these perspectives, Lisa.
There is. There are more and more dots going down on the Russia investigation, but the problem is we don't yet know how they are all connected. And I think the Senate Intelligence Committee is important more than anything for one reason. They will produce a report. We do not know if Mr. Mueller will end up producing a report or not, but what Senate Intelligence finds, hopefully we will eventually learn.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, James Comey's testimony, the British election, the Gulf states going after Qatar, reality winner Donald Trump, and infrastructure, terror in Tehran. Maybe Bill Cosby we'll get to. You can join us this hour. What did you make of James Comey's testimony yesterday? Where should this now go? Michael Crowley is with us, senior foreign affairs correspondent for Politico. We'll look at British elections and more there. Lisa Desjardins is with us, correspondent for the PBS NewsHour. She was at the hearings on Capitol Hill yesterday. Jack Beatty is here. 800-423-TALK is our number. There was James Comey, sort of that Boy Scout pose at the beginning of all the testimony while all those cameras clicked and clacked away. Before it was over, he said, "Look, this is fundamentally about deep foreign intervention in the fundamental exercise of American democracy, our elections." And he's talking about Russia. Here was Comey.
"But we're talking about a foreign government that, using technical intrusion and lots of other methods, tried to shape the way we think, we vote, we act. That is a big deal. And people need to recognize it. It's not about Republicans or Democrats. They're coming after America, which I hope we all love equally. They want to undermine our credibility in the face of the world. They think that this great experiment of ours is a threat to them, and so they're going to try to run it down and dirty it up as much as possible. That's what this is about, and they will be back, because we remain, as difficult as we can be with each other, we remain that shining city on the hill, and they don't like it."
And they will be back, said the FBI director before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Questions raised by the committee about why he did not challenge Donald Trump in the Oval Office and beyond when Trump apparently raised dropping or letting the Michael Flynn business go. Julie in Austin, Texas. Julie, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So this is one of the first major political events that I've ever followed. And I thought that Crowley handled himself with like a lot of poise and responsibility. But what I didn't understand is that Republicans just kept hounding and hounding on that topic of whether or not, why didn't he reprimand Trump when he was standing right there? And clearly from his first answer, he admitted that he didn't think of that. He was rather shell-shocked. And I'm of the opinion, like, he's very human. It would be very hard to say something like that to the president. So why is this being made such a big deal by the Republicans? Is this somehow going to, you know, ruin Donald Trump's defense case? Or why was this issue so brought up upon when it's a very human mistake to make?
Julie, let me take it to the panel. James Comey saying, look, I'm not Captain Courageous. If I'd had more presence of mind or maybe more courage. But here he was, one of those moments, as you cite, Julie, there in Austin, Texas, when we had Dianne Feinstein, in this case, a Democrat, asking Comey why he hadn't spoken up or pushed back on President Trump's request or hope that he would drop the criminal investigation of former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn.
But why didn't you stop and say, Mr. President, this is wrong. I cannot discuss this with you.
It's a great question. Maybe if I were stronger, I would have. I was so stunned by the conversation that I just took it in.
Lisa Desjardins, you were there in the hearing room. Did this come across as James Comey looking weak or like he had fallen down on the job as FBI director not to push back on the president of the United States in this instance?
Well, it was certainly a moment where the full room was at attention. I think what's happening here is that Democrats are trying to say this is a man who is very thoughtful and perhaps he made a mistake in not bringing this up, but he did so for the right reasons. There was nothing political in his decision-making, Mr. Comey's. On the other hand, to answer Julie's question, the reason I think Republicans are bringing this up so much is because they want the president to look human. They want to say, hey, here is an experienced hand in Washington, James Comey, who thinks there's a concern. Here is a brand new president who's never been in politics before. Why doesn't the man with the experience raise the concern he has to this new president who's just speaking off the top of his head? They're trying to make Trump look human here and say this was just kind of an error in protocol, if anything else. Of course, others suspect it was more, but that's the case Republicans are making, and that's why they bring up this moment so much.
James Comey saying, look, yes, I took notes. I took detailed notes because I was stunned at what I was hearing, and I wanted to be able to play those back. Here he was yesterday.
I was so stunned by the conversation that I just took it in. And the only thing I could think to say, because I was playing in my mind, because I was going to remember every word he said, I was playing in my mind, what should my response be? And that's why I very carefully chose the words. And look, I've seen the tweet about tapes. Lordy, I hope there are tapes.
Lordy, I hope there are tapes. The president has said, watch out, James Comey, if there are tapes here, kind of insinuation or implication that there may be. And Comey saying yesterday, bring them on. He would be happy to see them out in the light of day. Of course, no tapes produced by the White House at this point. Amy in Shinglehouse, Pennsylvania. Amy, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. It's great to hear you again.
Thank you.
I have seen a number of posts on Facebook from my Trump-supporting friends who say, why did he start documenting then as if, as a lawyer, he never had never done that before? It reminds me of when a spouse is getting divorced from, you know, a crazy gaslighting spouse and their lawyer tells them to document everything.
Yeah.
I think Comey sees Trump as that crazy spouse, and he needed to get it all down for posterity, if nothing else.
Get it down and eventually get it out as well. And he talked yesterday about how and why he had given a friend of his in New York, turns out to be a law professor at Columbia University, access to those very detailed memos that he had taken on these meetings, with the understanding that those would go beyond. And of course, they were then leaked by that friend to the New York Times. Comey said yesterday he did that in part because he wanted to see a special counsel named in this case. And, of course, that has now happened with Robert Mueller on the case. He talked yesterday about President Trump's tweet that Comey better hope there are no tapes of the conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Here was Comey.
It didn't dawn on me originally that there might be corroboration for our conversation. There might be a tape. And my judgment was I needed to get that out into the public square. And so I asked a friend of mine to share the content of the memo with a reporter. Didn't do it myself for a variety of reasons, but I asked him to because I thought that might prompt the appointment of a special counsel.
Jack Beatty, what about the leak allegation now? I mean, Comey put it out there himself, and he did it without any apparent sense of guilt about it. What about the technical legality? He was no longer FBI chief at this point. These were his own notes, but as Republicans were quick to point out, he tapped them out on an FBI laptop or computer when he was still head of the FBI. What about the leak charge here now, Jack?
Well, that's the last word in Mr. Trump's tweet this morning. A leaker. He leaked. And of course, what Trump is trying to do there is to connect this leak, which didn't involve anything to do with national security. This is not secret. The president's conversations with people are not secret. This was Mr. Comey's own experience he was relating, but they're trying to equate that with this idea, with this impression they have created, and more than impression, it's been a fact, that secrets have been leaked, that national security has been arguably breached in leak after leak after leak. This was not one of those occasions.
Will in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Thank you for calling, Will. You're on. What do you see?
Hi. I wanted to comment on the use of, by Trump, of the how. There's a colloquial usage there that implies, I hope you see your way how to do something. I've heard this all my life. I'm surprised no one's brought it up. And you can say, shorten that to say, I hope you do this, like you're saying, I hope you see your way to pay this bribe or do...
Well, he straightforwardly said, by Comey's accounting anyway, he said, I do hope. I hope you'll let it go. I hope you'll let Michael Flynn go and that investigation go. I hope. But Republicans yesterday saying, look, hope is not the same as a command. Comey's saying, I took it as a direction. Do you think that was a legitimate interpretation, Will, if that's the way he heard it?
That's the way I hear it, that when he... to take it as a literal demand because of the implied, I hope you see your way clear to do this or that.
Yeah. Michael Crowley, did that come across as credible yesterday, that the FBI chief felt he was up against a president telling him to drop a criminal investigation, and this just isn't done?
That's right, Tom. I think that it came across as extremely credible to Democrats, and Republicans seem to, you know, there's an interesting Republican spin here. We've heard a couple versions of it. One comes from House Speaker Paul Ryan, who was speaking before Comey testified, but after Comey's prepared testimony was released that told his sort of core narrative, in which Ryan, I can't quote him directly off the top of my head, but said something to the effect of, you know, Trump is new to government, new to Washington, doesn't know all the rules, doesn't necessarily understand that you can't speak in a certain way to the FBI director. Chris Christie had said on television a couple days ago, you know, this is how people in New York talk. This is sort of a style of talking, but it's you're misunderstanding it. You're reading too much into it. It's not as sinister as it seems. I mean, they're setting an incredibly low bar for Trump here. But the idea is that Comey is misunderstanding Trump. Trump is not pressuring him, asking him to do things that are inappropriate, that Trump just sort of doesn't understand the rules of the road, and we should give him some more, I guess, forgiveness or margin of error. And I think Democrats find that to be an outrageously permissive attitude. And I would just add, you know, I don't find it reassuring if the defense is, this is sort of how people in the New York real estate world talk. It's no big deal. I mean, you know, not to besmirch any of the upstanding members of the New York real estate world, but I don't have the sense that the kind of chatter that goes on behind closed doors in that world is always totally on the level or something you would want to import to the very highest levels of our national government.
I mean, this was not a real estate deal. This was a presidential election in the United States. But here was Paul Ryan, and he wasn't exactly saying Trump didn't understand what he was doing. He was saying he didn't understand he shouldn't do it. Here was Ryan.
Of course, there needs to be a degree of independence between DOJ, FBI, and a White House, and a line of communication is established. The president's new at this. He's new to government. And so he probably wasn't steeped in the long-running protocols that establish the relationships between DOJ, FBI, and White Houses. He's just new to this.
He's just new to this. Republican Paul Ryan there. Nancy Pelosi, a little tougher.
We saw confirmation in Director Comey's resolute testimony detailing the frightening reality of President Trump's pattern of contempt for justice, his pattern of concerted and inexcusable efforts to shut down the FBI's investigation of his cronies, ties to Russia.
Travis in Dayton, Ohio. Travis, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I just want to be one of the only ones that defend our president today.
Let's hear it.
I think he did exaggerate about crowd size and, you know, this and that. But didn't Obama lie about you could keep your doctor? And didn't George Bush lie about the weapons of mass destruction? And it just seems hypocritical that we are critiquing this president so hard. And also, where's the proof of the Russian interference? It's all hearsay, and it really makes me upset, and I support our president.
Well, I mean, it depends who you trust here. You've got all the intelligence agencies saying interference. You've got the head of the FBI saying that there was a very deliberate and concerted effort to interfere. But there's, Jack Beatty, there's the, talk about the low bar, or just the bar, you know, lies about WMD and the Iraq War, misrepresentations, or perhaps lies if you look at it that way, about what the Affordable Care Act would mean. Presidents do it. Presidents do it, Jack.
They do it, but historians in the last campaign said there had never been a candidate for president who lied as often as Mr. Trump, and since the inauguration, that has continued. You can look it up on the Washington Post fact checker. They just have a numerical score of them, so I think quantitatively the president is in a class all by himself, and that is crucial here. I mean, it means that at some level, he can't be believed. You can't give him the benefit of the doubt because too often he's presumed on credulity.
Odessa in Montgomery, Alabama. Thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to make a comment. Mr. Trump is new. He has no political training. That, to me, is more of a reason he shouldn't be president. Nobody has time to train a president with all the turmoil that's going on around us today, especially with the United States. So he has lied through his campaign. He's constantly lying. He thinks because he is president, he has the right to do the things that he wants to do the way that he wants to do them. And everything that he's done is the wrong way. He overstepped his boundaries when he gave this man, gave Comey a phone call. He shouldn't have never been in contact with Comey.
And Paul Ryan more or less saying that, but saying, look, he's new, being more forgiving, perhaps, Odessa, than you are. One more right here, David in Texas. David, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had a comment that I feel like the most damning testimony and reality that we're seeing here is that Donald Trump continues to care not one bit to investigate or know any outcome of an investigation that our election was hacked. And I find that untenable in any president, whether you agree with the premise or not, to wholesale ignore it and say it's fake news, to me is a reason for impeachment right there. And he lies about everything. So I think there's something there, whether there is or not. Just the fact that he doesn't want it even looked at is...
David, we've got it. Our time is short before the break, but I appreciate your call from Austin there. I mean, Michael Crowley, step back here. It is notable, remarkable, by James Comey's telling anyway, that in all these interactions, there's no report of Donald Trump saying, what are we going to do about Russia's apparent interest in manipulating American elections? This is fundamental to our political system.
That's right, and I think that's a great comment by that caller. It's we risk getting bogged down in the minor, well, not minor, but in, you know, conflicting accounts of specific events and losing the big picture here again, which is the pretty clear evidence of interference by a hostile foreign power. And Donald Trump has demonstrated no interest or outrage about the fact that this quite clearly happened based on a strong consensus of our intelligence officials. And indeed, Tom, I think it's under-remarked on that he continues to press on pretty vigorously to establish warmer relations with Russia. He's probably going to meet with Vladimir Putin in July at the G20 summit. It's okay to talk to Russia. Even critics of Russia think that we have to have some dialogue, but Trump seems ready to press ahead with a fundamental change in relations if he can pull it off. It's pretty remarkable in the current context.
Long-time, big-time GOP operative Karl Rove, writing in the Wall Street Journal today, in the Wall Street Journal, Trump lacks the focus or self-discipline to do the basic work required of a president. Lisa Jardin, in a word, do you see this whole scandal shutting down or opening up? What's the direction?
It will open up, certainly, but the question is how it affects voters. I don't know what the future is there.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron partners with sustainable farms, fisheries, and ranchers to bring you everything you need to create incredible home-cooked meals. Ingredients come pre-measured, so there's no food waste, and it's delivered right to your door. Rediscover how fun cooking can be while enjoying seasonally inspired recipes and exploring new flavors and cuisines. No commitment. Get the meals only when you want. Get your first three Blue Apron meals free, plus free shipping, by visiting blueapron.com/OP.
I'm Tom Asprey. This is On Point. In other news this week, on Wednesday, CNN interviewed the parents of alleged NSA leaker Reality Winner, who pleaded not guilty yesterday in court. Billy Winner Davis, Reality's mother, said she worried her daughter won't get due process.
My biggest fear in all of this is that she's not going to get a fair trial. She's not going to be treated fairly. She's going to be made an example of.
She's in trouble, that's for sure. Bill Cosby on trial this week for sexual assault. Andrea Constant testified that Cosby drugged her before moving her to the couch and sexually assaulting her. Here's NBC's Stephanie Gosk.
With a shaky voice, Constant told the jury, "I was trying to get my hands to move and my legs to move, but I was frozen. Unable to fight back," she says, "Cosby molested her. I wanted it to stop," she told the courtroom.
And Wonder Woman premiered last weekend, already earned over $300 million worldwide at the box office. It's a hit.
I am Diana of Themyscira, daughter of Hippolyta.
In the name of all that is good, your wrath upon this world is over.
Wonder Woman goes big. You can join us this hour on Donald Trump, on James Comey, and much beyond. What do you think? Is the full Brexit still a sure thing after Theresa May's setback in the polls this week in the UK? What happened to the Conservatives there? And what do you see coming from President Trump on American infrastructure? Are you for the privatizing part? Do you fear tolls and fees all over? What's happening in the Middle East, we should ask as well. With everybody ganging up on Qatar this week, with terrorism in the heart of Tehran, can you even keep up with the pace of news lately, with the onslaught? Are you wishing for Wonder Woman's lasso of truth? Michael Crowley, help us turn to these elections in the UK. There is so much astonishment coming out there as the UK, which of course in 2016 voted to leave the European Union, the Brexit. Theresa May went for what she hoped would be a big win to help her in those negotiations. Instead, she's barely hung on to a majority. Early this morning, Jeremy Corbyn spoke after he held his own seat with an overwhelming majority. He's the leader of the Labour Party. He said politics in Britain have changed.
People have said they've had quite enough of austerity politics. They've had quite enough of cuts in public expenditure, underfunding our health service, underfunding our schools and our education service, and not giving our young people the chance they deserve in our society.
Funny, not talking about the Brexit, but rather about social policy in the UK under Theresa May's Conservative government. Here she was this morning, a speech outside Buckingham Palace, saying that her party, with its slim showing, would stay in power anyway, in coalition with the Democratic Unionist Party of Northern Ireland. Talk about bringing in, sort of a small player here to keep the majority intact. This announcement came after she received formal approval from the Queen. Here's Theresa May.
What the country needs more than ever is certainty. And having secured the largest number of votes and the greatest number of seats in the general election, it is clear that only the Conservative and Unionist Party has the legitimacy and ability to provide that certainty by commanding a majority in the House of Commons.
Well, just barely, not really, lost seats, biggest, but by no means a majority. Michael Crowley, what is unfolding before our eyes here in the UK?
Well, there was a wonderful quote in the New York Times from a leading Belgian politician who is also a member of the European Commission, I believe, said that I thought surrealism was a Belgian invention. It really is a surreal turn of events in British politics, which has been chaotic for several years now. And what we're left with is kind of a scrambled egg. And I think people are still sorting through it and trying to figure out what emerges.
But she thought this would be a big win for her. I mean, these were 3 years early, these elections. She called them in April thinking she would coast to a great big majority.
Yes, this backfired spectacularly on Theresa May. And what we can't be sure of, by the way, is what role Donald Trump might have played here. Donald Trump, who is very unpopular in the UK and across Europe. May, of course, very early in Trump's presidency, went to the White House. They had a very chummy meeting. They rather famously held hands as they walked along the back of the White House outside the Rose Garden. You know, Tom, it also strikes me that, you know, when Trump took office, we thought we were seeing a crashing wave of sort of populism and right-wing nativism crashing across the West. And in fact, in several elections now, you know, the right has not fared very well. Marine Le Pen was defeated in France. And this election in the UK was very good news for the Labour Party and its leader, Jeremy Corbyn, who is, you know, so far to the left, he kind of makes Bernie Sanders look a bit like Mitt Romney, maybe. Yeah. I mean, he is really far left. And so there are just all kinds of tides and currents happening in European politics right now that I think we don't fully understand and which are just causing chaos across the Western world.
Will the Brexit still happen? Will it happen on anything like the terms that its promoters had predicted or hoped for?
Well, that's the big question. It looks much less likely now. Theresa May had been pushing for a so-called hard Brexit, which would be a quite clean break from the European Union without caveats and sort of long transitional agreements and continuity in various ways. It now looks like the so-called soft Brexit forces have been empowered and that you will probably see it's quite likely when negotiations begin in 10 days, as they are scheduled to at least, a softer version of Brexit where the ties between Great Britain and the EU maybe remain in place to a degree that people would not have expected. May called this election in part to empower herself for these upcoming negotiations and to have that firm, clean break from the EU. And that certainly does not look like it's going to happen now.
I mean, the BBC talking today about the EU, the UK staying in economic alliance with the EU, and as a price of that, not being able to deny access to European Union passport holders. That was a big political issue in 2016 when they voted to leave. Yeah. Lauren in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Lauren, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My question is sort of how we're going to interact with UK now. If Theresa May isn't an ally of Donald Trump, isn't an enemy of Donald Trump, she's certainly not giving him a ringing endorsement. But with her loss of a majority and maybe even sort of a mandate to leave, people are calling for her resignation. Does this immediately change how the U.S. is interacting with the EU or the Brexit negotiations at all? Or are we just going to continue our day-to-day activities?
I mean, Donald Trump and Theresa May, they held hands, as Michael Crowley said. They were close, and she was not shy about that, Lauren.
No, she wasn't. There's still that act of condemnation, though, of his statements after Sadiq Khan and him got into a bit of a row. So I wonder if we're going to see any interaction at all. Or
yeah, Lisa Desjardins, what about it? Donald Trump was very tough on the London mayor after the terror attacks there recently. Sadiq Khan saying we should not keep extending the invitation for Donald Trump even to come and visit London. What about the relationship between the U.S. and U.K. in the aftermath of these elections?
There's no question there is great strain on the usual paths of diplomacy and the usual way that diplomats talk between the United States and Great Britain because of President Trump. But there is certainly a push underneath it all for almost everyone on all sides to say our general commitment to one another is the same. The one thing that we did see change in the wake of the terror attacks in London and in the UK, when there was information leaked from British intelligence through the U.S. media, and the British intelligence, rather sure that came from a U.S. source, we saw the U.K. intelligence shut down briefly, at least the amount of information they were exchanging on those terror attacks. That's very significant. That's not just language. That's an actual problem of trust. And those are the kinds of things we need to watch more carefully because that British-American intelligence connection is vital, at least those who work in that field say, to fighting terrorism around the world. So that's something to watch very carefully.
Jack Beatty, what about the right-wing wave, the right-wing nationalist wave that many were predicting would continue across Europe. It didn't happen with Marine Le Pen in France. Now Theresa May has faced a setback. Where do you think that stands, Jack?
It seems to have crested and even fallen back some. And notably, an orthodox, well, as Michael said, extremely left-wing candidate, but an orthodox socialist prospered in this election, Corbyn. That is something. In other words, you didn't have something like what happened in France happened, where the Socialist Party split. The Socialist Party stayed strong, the Labour Party stayed strong, and did well. And that, for those who think that the future of social democracy is important to stability in Europe, that's a very good sign. People were taking it as a worrisome trend that the socialists were hurting so badly all over Europe, because they do, after all, support the EU, they do support integration, NATO, as well as more social justice. So I think not only was this a setback for the right-wing movement in general, and the fact the right-wing party there, UKIP, disappeared, all but disappeared, it was also a sort of strong moment for social democracy.
British voters sitting back and really contemplating where they stand. Interesting split here. Young voters going very strongly for the Labour leader, socialist Jeremy Corbyn. Older voters in the majority going toward Theresa May. We've got more to look at abroad, but I want to bring it back home. This was supposed to be Infrastructure Week. Well, Donald Trump speaking more about that at the Transportation Department today in Washington. Here he was in the president in Cincinnati on Wednesday saying that this country has fallen behind on its own infrastructure need. It invests too much outside the United States.
We build in foreign countries. We spend trillions and trillions of dollars outside of our nation, but we can't build a road, a highway, a tunnel, a bridge in our own nation. And we watch everything falling into disrepair.
The president in Cincinnati this week, he's talked a lot on the campaign trail about a $1 trillion investment in American infrastructure right here at home. But how would that look? Well, it certainly would not all be under Donald Trump's plan, federal money. Here he was again in Cincinnati.
At least $200 billion of the $1 trillion plan will come from direct federal investment. Working with states, local governments, and private industry, we will ensure that these new federal funds are matched by significant additional dollars.
Significant additional dollars and a lot of private money in there. Lisa Desjardins, Americans looking at their country may say, hey, quite right, we need to be spending on infrastructure here. What is the president actually proposing?
We don't know. We do know, as you say, we know everything that you just explained, that he's proposing a private-public partnership. We know in some local cases and state cases that worked well, but there are many different kinds of private-public partnerships. They work a million different ways. We don't know what kind of impact this would have on, say, taxes. Is he planning to use tax incentives to try and encourage businesses? That would have a major effect potentially on the deficit. There is no actual formal plan yet. There are just sort of bullet points that we've heard from the White House about what they would like to do. And I think more than anything, Tom, I don't want to rain on the infrastructure parade because it is something that everyone recognizes as a need and Democrats and Republicans both would like to work on. But the truth is that Congress is so backed up and so unable right now to find the votes for major issues, including health care and then tax reform, that it's not clear at all when a major infrastructure plan could get on the agenda. Perhaps it could get rolled into tax reform, but the fate of tax reform is now very highly in doubt. And I think that it's certainly a very important discussion, but the reality of it is that it's not clear when any action could actually take place.
Healthcare backed up. Tax reform, the president said it's moving through Congress, but it is not. There is no bill. On infrastructure, is there anything else you see here, Jack? I mean, are we talking about privatizing in the Trumpian view of the world, American highways, bridges, airports? Am I going to put money in a machine to go pick my kids up at the airport?
It has that that ring, doesn't it? And this is a return to an earlier American model. In the Jacksonian era, they called this internal improvements. And states all over the country granted franchises to corporations to run bridges and highways and the like. And the result was that when an economic downturn came, these things weren't profitable anymore, and they became white elephants for the states, and there was a huge financial and political scandal over these franchise corporations.
And Tom?
Yes, Michael, please.
Well, just quickly, infrastructure was an issue when Trump first came into office before Russia had consumed everything that was worrying a lot of Democrats. And, you know, Steve Bannon had this theory that you could create a grand new political coalition, bring in the sort of construction worker, hard hat Reagan Democrats with this massive infrastructure bill that would create tons of jobs, put people to work, and give Trump a kind of Reagan-esque economic platform that had this sort of classic, you know, American workmanship industry component to it. And it now that seems not to be a great threat to Democrats. Doesn't look like it's going anywhere. But I think it's worth remembering that just a couple months ago, this was the vision for some political realignment that Trump might be able to pull off with the help of a huge amount of federal investment. I think now probably it's not going anywhere. Shows how times have changed quickly.
We'll see where that goes or does not go. Very quickly abroad, Qatar. You've got all the Gulf countries, Saudi Arabia in the lead, ganging up now in Qatar, saying they're the bad guy when it comes to terror and more. Where does this go? Are we cruising towards some kind of Middle East war with Iran? Is this just putting a headlock on someone that what's happening with Qatar there, Michael?
Yeah, I like that metaphor, putting a headlock on Qatar. I think there's some truth to that because maybe you think about a family and there's maybe a kid brother who gets, kind of hazed and beaten up lightly.
But they're rich as crisis here. They've got as much as – I mean, they're just rolling in dough and gas and everything else.
Everybody in that region is, and they're very similar in many ways. And so I think that their differences become pronounced. You know, sometimes when you have a group with a lot of similarities, when there is a difference, it really stands out and creates hard feelings. But, you know, Qatar has kind of been the odd man out in that neighborhood for a while because unlike the Saudis and the Emiratis in particular, Qatar has been much more supportive of Islamist political movements, particularly the Muslim Brotherhood. If you take Egypt, for example, there's been a long time tug of war in Egypt. Qatar supported the Muslim Brotherhood government that took power after Hosni Mubarak was deposed and after the Muslim Brotherhood was pushed out in the military coup that brought us President Sisi. The Saudis and the Emiratis have come in with huge amounts of money to prop him up. It's a struggle over what politics in the region should look like. What? I don't think it's headed for war, Tom. I just think this is a flare-up of a long-running difference of opinion of how all that money should be used to promote change throughout the Middle East.
Watch last this quick space. Michael Crowley, I'm sorry, we're just out of time right there. Dodd-Frank didn't even get to, but Republicans pushing to dismantle regulation of the banking industry that came in after the big crash. Michael Crowley with Politico. Come back soon. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom.
Lisa Desjardins with the PBS NewsHour. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Good to be here. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. Jack Beatty, great to have you as always.
Thank you and welcome back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.